When we get to Saltara, they're going to be doing a more complete, in some ways, version of this. But usually that takes like so much time. So we wanted to give you guys a head start and also kind of give you a bit more in-depth information about how it kind of ties into the rest of the retreat and our approach outside of the active medicine space. But we also thought it was a great time to get you guys thinking now that you've been on the diet. The wonderful, glorious, super easy diet that ayahuasca asks of us, and start to get you thinking that you will be coming to sit with the medicine again or meeting the medicine soon. So, we want to begin by just talking a little bit about ayahuasca, about its history, about its relationship in the context of the specific tradition that we're going to be drinking in, because there are many traditions. There are many indigenous tribes that work with this medicine. I'm always learning new ways that people work with it. And then, of course, people in our culture are also drinking ayahuasca. But we are working with the Shipibo, and ayahuasca is actually a Quechua word. So it doesn't even belong to the Shipibo. But for some reason, that was the word that really caught on in our popular culture. But with the Shipibo, they call it Oni. And Oni means, like, a super rough translation is knowledge or wisdom. The Shipibo word for, what we call shamans, they don't really use that word. But because ayahuasca is called Oni, they are called Onayas. So that's the word for someone who heals using Oni. When we speak of tradition, we speak of the Shipibo tradition throughout the retreat. The brew is made in, again, it can be brewed in many variations. You can read online that there are many different plants that people will add to it. But at its core, it's made from two plants. One is the ayahuasca vine, and one is the shakuna leaf. And together, those combine to create the spirit of ayahuasca. And for different reasons, they prepare our bodies in a way to where we can receive the spirit. When they are making this ayahuasca, it's not the ayahuasca that you buy online. They are chanting their medicine into it while they brew. They are brewing it with great intention. They're not just throwing it on a fire and walking away and coming back in 10 hours. Like, they are really working. The creation of the medicine is a ceremony for these people. They tend to only work with the vine and leaves of these particular plants. They're picked at particular times of day. These healers have just an unbelievable connection with these plants and speak with them and do the proper reciprocal exchange for these plants as well, which we'll get deeper into in this retreat. But you don't just take, you give back. So there's an offering that's also made so that this medicine is right and pure and in proper alignment with all our relations. So the preparation is a ritual. They're also fasting and working with sacred tobacco and the Icaros, or the medicine songs, all of which you will experience in the active ceremony space. In terms of meeting the spirit of ayahuasca, which is going to be a new experience for a lot of you, the best definition that I've heard of ayahuasca is that basically it's a multidimensional hyper-intelligent being. And you can develop a personal relationship between yourself and ayahuasca, as well as the plants, because it is also part of an ensemble of a great network of all the plants of the jungle and actually throughout the world. I've worked with plants with ayahuasca outside of the Amazonian jungle, and the healers have actually also asked me at times to bring them plants from outside of the jungle. So this is a relationship that you are beginning with a non-animal being. It doesn't work like Western medicine, as you might imagine. Western medicine tends to be very passive, and it tends to treat us each as a machine. Really, the world revolves around the medicine. This is a medicine, and it treats this. And if you're not reacting to that, you have side effects or something like that. But this medicine is very customized to you. It meets you where you are. And so, likewise, to get the most out of it, you will also work with it. So you are an active participant in your healing process. It is enabling you. Sometimes I call it my metaphysical therapist. It's showing me and keeping me safe, teaching me how to lift the weights, but it's up to me to hit the gym. And so ayahuasca really shows us and gives us knowledge and gives us wisdom. And then it's up to us to do the work to change our lives. And also sometimes to do the work to receive that information, because we can often have stories and other things that will prevent us from connecting with the truth. It speaks to people differently, speaks in quotes. It may not make sense in the moment, but part of the work is getting to that place where, I mean, I just had an experience where it's like a ceremony I had last August finally made sense to me. So much like dreams, it can show up later for you because you had to catch up with the vision. In our culture, ayahuasca is often referred to as a she, and in the Ohni tradition, it is not. The ayahuasca vine is the masculine, and the chacruna is the feminine. And it's strange because there's like the ayahuasca vine, and then there's the chacruna leaf, but together they create a single spirit of ayahuasca, which is neither and also both masculine and feminine energies. So, you often hear Mother Ayahuasca and so forth, and maybe it is in other traditions, I don't know. But in this tradition, that's not how the Shipibo see it, and that's not how they're coming to it and working with it. Keeping in mind that this is a relationship, and it's a new relationship, you're about to meet a new sentience. It does take time to build trust. This plant is getting to know you, and you're getting to know it and understand it. This plant that is sort of not necessarily from this world. And so it's important to keep in mind that there's some patience involved at times to just really build trust with this medicine and this being. So we want not only to be open to patience, but also to vulnerability and gratitude and acceptance and all the good stuff that we're going to be doing in our coaching together. There can be a tendency to have expectations, to try to control or force things. But in my experience, it has, and in witnessing other people and their healing processes, trusting the medicine and trusting the pace that you're moving at is the way to go. If you're not where you want to be at the time, maybe there's a reason for that. And you can trust that you will get there if it is meant for you to be there. When you all signed up and I had my little video that your ceremony has begun, I really meant it. When you make a soul commitment to ayahuasca, it begins working with you. And you may have felt its presence or had that kind of extra consciousness as you've been entering this dieta. And then once you drink and once you really work with it, it is always in you. So this is a presence and a relationship you will have for the rest of your life. In this way, it's not a psychedelic. This is plant medicine. And for the most part, psychedelics are viewed within a psychotherapeutic framework. And for us, this is holistic. It's not just mind, body, it's also spirit. To some of you might have a sense of what that means. And if you do, that might radically change after this experience. But if you don't know what it means, or you don't have a sense of it, don't worry. You'll receive the information that you need for your healing in the order that you need it. You can fast. It will take you deeper in this process. They'll talk a little bit more about that. You'll need to notify the facilitators, let us know that you're doing that if you do decide to do that. It's pretty hardcore. When you go deeper with the medicine, it seems like there's less and less food available all the time. But if there is something that you are feeling you really want to get to, and it's just kind of been out of reach after you've had some experience with the medicine, that is an option for you. I also wanted to note that not only has the medicine begun working on you guys, but the healers have too. And Tanya and I have too. We have already begun the process for you with our intention, with our hearts, with our own personal preparation. So you have been held already in this process before arriving. The foundations of the Shipibo system involve the Icaros. And so if you go on YouTube, you can hear these medicine songs. They're beautiful. And they will hit you very differently when you're actually in the ceremonial space. These are medicine songs that are hard won. The dieting process that you've been on, imagine it's stricter and harder. And that's what these people do all the time in order to help others. This is a sacrifice that they make. And in this process, where they receive initiations with other plants, they receive these medicine songs. And it's really fascinating because, people who have never met, who have dieted the same plant, will come away with the same melody. And so these are very sacred songs that come through this unique process that has been handed down through the millennia. And so when they are chanting, they're not just singing, and it's not necessarily a pre-programmed song. Like, this is a song that has never been sung before in this way for you. It's all improv. They're working with the energy that's there before you. And these songs come through as the spirits of the plants that they've worked with or that they're familiar with, who they've met in that visionary space. And so instead of having to physically ingest these other plants, they're actually chanting them into you. And you're receiving them through the energy of the frequencies of their songs. We will be getting more into plant dietas at the end of this process after we leave Soltara, but there's a lot of information. So we want to take things as bite-sized as we possibly can for you guys to absorb as much as possible. There are some things, though, that you may see in ceremony that we wanted just to cover a little bit. So, yeah, Tanya, can you talk a little bit about soplar?
Yeah, soplar is Spanish for blowing. So under some circumstances, they will be blowing a specific intention on the little glass of the medicine. So it can activate it in different energetic ways. And then soplar is the opposite of chupar, which is like sucking in. So even very often you will see doing this with their many different medicines or their sacred objects as well. But they may come and perform some of this specific work in which what they are doing is basically identifying some kind of specific energies that need to be either put in, like brought in, or taken out from the person or from the medicine.
Yeah, I've seen at Soltara, I've witnessed soplars, but I've never seen a chupar. I've received a chupar though in the Amazon, and it's pretty wild. They actually put their mouths to your skin and suck, and it's extremely effective. But it is kind of weird. It's kind of like a human leech attached to your body, getting it done. There will also be tools in the ceremony that may be unfamiliar to you. One of the difficult sort of cultural transitions from our culture to theirs is the use of tobacco. Once we are in person, we'll be going more deeply into tobacco, but we just kind of wanted to plant the seed of how they use it and how you may experience it in ceremony, because it can be triggering for some people. And our culture certainly does abuse the spirit of tobacco. They use a special tobacco. The tobacco in our culture that we're familiar with is called blonde tobacco, but there's actually a separate strain. So what they're using is called black tobacco. They call mapacho. And this is a rolled tobacco, and it does many things, again, which we'll go more deeply into, but for the most part, it feeds the spirit of the plants. It's an amplifier in many cases. It's extremely, extremely powerful. It's also a purgative. It's an extremely powerful spirit. It's also said to be the currency of the plant spirit world. We'll talk a little bit more about how that manifests when we're all together. It is not meant to be inhaled. The reason that people will use it is it can clean your energy. It's also a great protector. It's great protection. Often when you go to different centers, you'll see tobacco planted around the edges of the property. Again, it can amplify. So if you have taken a dose and something's come up and you would like to have the medicine become a little bit more activated, you can puff on some mapacho and it might amplify that for you and work together with the medicine to create a stronger dosage for you for a time. And it can also ground you. It's extremely, extremely sacred when used in the proper context. So mapacho is awesome. They will have some for you there when we arrive.
It is a sacred plant in most ancestral traditions in the whole American continent, actually, in many different presentations. And it is also seen as the one great communicator with the higher spirits. So this is part of the reasons why, like we see it in Native nations as well, in across all this North American continent, in which they are smoking this ceremonial tobacco full of intentions, and we are smoking it till the end, because this way we are making sure that our intentions are transmitted and heard at higher levels. It's a beautiful, beautiful plant to work. Like it really creates, as Miok was saying, this sense of grounding. And it's very often used in the rest of the dietas as well, because it brings clarity of thought and vision.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for bringing up intention, because that's another really big difference, is it's not a mindlessly smoking situation. This plant spirit is never used or called upon without great intention. And so there can be times when they will pray very deep intentions into Mapacho and then hand it over to you. And so the Mapacho is carrying their prayer to you as you learn to work with it. The other tool that you'll see that Sultara will supply is Rau Ininti, which is specific to Costa Rican plants. So we're using some indigenous plants from where we'll be. In Peru, this is called Florida water or just flower water. And this is really beautiful medicine. Often what it can do is it's almost like, I call it like Febreze for the soul. So if you're feeling super hot, or you just cleared something, or really came to a difficult resolution with yourself, and it's just kind of like, oh, you put some of this stuff on and you're good as new. It feels really good, it smells really good, and Sultara will be providing you with your own personal bottle to use both in and out of ceremony. When we arrive, these ceremonies are done at night. They're done at night for a number of reasons. The biggest, I think, or the most obvious would be that it's best for the visions, for the healers. This is why we're using kind of special lights and being very careful with light in the space, is because, when they're in the middle of a chant with someone and they're seeing what they're seeing, you don't want to like shine a huge light in their face. They will be sitting in the center. They will be sending protection for the space. The space has been cleaned energetically, as has the entire property. The entire property has a very different feel, even than, just other places very close by in Costa Rica. And it's because there's this protection. The healers have spoken with the land, they've spoken with the ancestors of the land, and everyone's cool with us being there. Again, they just have this amazing connection. And so we have permission from all sentient beings to do ceremony in this space at that time. They will at times come out from the center to chant and give you individual chants, but all of the chants are for you. Even if they're sitting in front of someone else's mat, they're always chanting to everyone in the room. And all of it's medicine for all of us. Like the flower water, Sultara also uses, or their ayahuasca comes from native plants in Costa Rica. So they are using the ayahuasca vine, but instead of the chacruna, they're using a leaf that is native to Costa Rica. So it's slightly different ayahuasca. It's really beautiful ayahuasca, but it's slightly different and it's a bit more diluted. The typical dose for the first ceremony is to start you off with 1 cup. But if you ever went to Peru, 1 cup would be a lot. You'd be drinking more of like half of a cup. And this plant has 5-MeO DMT, so it's like meeting ayahuasca's cousin or something, but it's still ayahuasca. But it's a wonderful thing to be in Costa Rica and also to be drinking the ayahuasca that Costa Rica is offering to us. The healers have been to the place where this is made, and so it has the seal of approval from the healers. The healers know how to work with it well. And it grows on the same property as many other of the master plants that they've also worked with. They'll go a little bit more into this, but there is a potential for taking a second dose at some point in the middle of the ceremony if the medicine hasn't opened up for you. It's strange. Ayahuasca can be difficult to dose because it can be different every time. And the more ayahuasca doesn't necessarily mean the bigger of a night that you have. There are times when you take just a little bit and it blows up. And then there are times when you want to have a big night and you're ready. And so you'll take a dose that's very large for you. And, and it'll be very, very subtle. It'll work with you very subtly. So, just watch out for the expectation of the mind set that more is going to be necessarily deeper. The way this medicine works as well is that, we are getting cleaned through the Icaros. And so, unlike drugs or psychedelics, you don't actually build tolerance to this medicine. I drink hardly any at this point. As you get clearer and clearer, you become more and more sensitive. And so you don't necessarily need as much medicine to get you where you're going. So that's also something to keep in mind. Many of our usual expectations will not apply in this space. So it helps us to stay present with what's happening and watch our minds try to predict things. And also, your dosages, depending on how the medicine's working with you, it could also fluctuate over the week. In general, it's best not to compare. I mean, it's really no different than in life, but especially in this space, not to compare one of your ceremonies to another's ceremony and not to compare your experiences to other participants' experiences. So much of the reason that we didn't allow couples or family members and that we have so much silence is for you to have the space and the focus to have your own unique process and to try to remove as many distractions as possible that might try to hook you into comparison or into leaving your own work.
Miyok was mentioning that sometimes you may have this large dosage and have a subtle experience. But I would like just to point out that subtle doesn't necessarily mean irrelevant, in the sense that it's always wonderful to observe what's getting activated, what's getting triggered in whatever the circumstances may be. Sometimes the most significant medicine may come in a very subtle or almost light experience. So just be open. For me, the great invitation is to consider, as Mia was saying at the beginning, ceremony has started already, and ceremony actually will be every single minute from the moment you decided to sign in till the moment you're deciding for your own personal closing. So keeping the eye of our inner wisdom open to observe whatever is arising and what many kinds of different messages we may get from one thing that sometimes comes as a single idea, no? Like you get focused and, oh, I was sure it is confirming this. Just if you may pause for a second and consider what other possibilities and be open for the answers to start almost like downloading into your spirit.
Thank you, Tanya. Yeah, certainly subtle does not mean less powerful. I personally had a ceremony where nothing happened at all. And that's a ceremony that got me permanently walking again. So, again, when we can really learn to trust and work really beautiful things that make no sense and are totally counterintuitive can happen because that's the hyper intelligent level that these plants work on. When you're actually in the medicine, many different spaces and experiences might open up for you. There could be traumatic memories that arise. One way that we are in alignment with Soltara is that we define trauma as any experience that caused a break from our authentic selves. That was the trauma. The stimulus was the stimulus, but it was how we reacted to it. And so this is an opportunity when we do have recovered memories in these spaces to rewire our responses to those experiences with the tools that Tanya and I will be working with you with at this retreat. Also, in the space, all trauma is valid. Often people will downplay because other people have had it worse, or, I never had child, no one hit me when I was a kid. But in this space, we really want to honor everything, especially because when we're children with our adult minds, we forget how sensitive we were, how every little thing had such a great impact on us. These are memories that are stored in our DNA, in our cellular structure. And so we really want to honor everything that comes up and hold space for all trauma. And that's something that will be important to try to remember to do when the medicine is bringing that fun stuff up for you. A lot of emotions will surface. And so, again, the word is allow. Trauma, traumatic memories, all emotions, we just want to allow them. Typically, the more you resist, the harder and longer of a night it will be. The medicine really wants to help you to clear them. And often that means that they have to arise to our awareness and we have to feel them so that they can feel their way out of us. One way of saying it is that we want to open to how these emotions feel in our bodies because often we want to resist, want to shut it down, we want to distract ourselves. Like who wants to feel unpleasant emotions? But that is the way the medicine works. And that is how we actually process them in this work. Naming the emotion that's present can often be helpful. And Tanya and I are going to be helping you guys stick to that because we often want to move into the mind. We often want to move into the perceptions and the stories that we build to protect ourselves from those emotions. But we're really going to be living a lot in the emotional space during this retreat. When we look at projections and aversion and resistance, it can be a little bit tricky. The name of the game is really discernment. So it can be hard to know, like, is this really happening or am I projecting this or did that person really, like, what's going on? And so this is a space to really sit with ourselves and parse and get really honest about how we contribute to things and how we're a part of the experiences that we're having. Projections can particularly arise in moments of difficulties towards others. It is a protective reflex to project and deflect. And so, again, it never hurts to go into the space of allowing and self-awareness about what process has actually been activated in you. One of the sort of counterintuitive aspects as well in this work is that, we live in a culture where triggers are bad and where everybody gets a trigger warning so that you know how to avoid things. But in this work, triggers are viewed as extremely rich sites for information for growth. They're incredible opportunities for self-knowledge. Number one, why did that trigger me and totally didn't bother this person over here? And so allowing curiosity and openness and being able to hold some of the sometimes unpleasant emotions that accompany that process That's really the container that we're going to be holding for you so that you can feel safe to do that. So the more you're checking in, and again, this is part of the container that we're holding outside of the ceremony to help you practice. The more you're checking in with yourself to create awareness of your needs and wants and expectations, the more you can make that a habit and second nature for yourself, the more that you will automatically bring that into the ceremony space when the ayahuasca is ayahuasca-ing you. Sometimes the ayahuasca is referred to as the vine of death, but know that you are safe. No one's ever died on ayahuasca. When you hear about people getting hurt on ayahuasca or dying in an ayahuasca ceremony, it's always from something else. It's never from the ayahuasca. You can't OD on ayahuasca. It's just not a thing. But you can definitely feel like you're dying on ayahuasca. And some people do have that experience. If you do have that experience, again, it's about the self-awareness and watching yourself, seeing how you're responding to the experience. You're not actually dying, but a part of you is. Now, ayahuasca is kind of the queen or king of ego death. So it can be a useful instrument to ask yourself, if you do find yourself in that moment, to ask what part of me is dying. Because we're using this in the tradition that we work in, we are not hallucinating. Ayahuasca is not a hallucinogen in this context. We are entering the visionary world. And this is held through the medicine songs. This is held through the magic of the healers and the incredible relationship that they have cultivated with these intelligent beings. The Shipibo are holding the space for the medicine to allow many different intelligences to come together. Like the Moloka, in a way, becomes a venue for plant and animal spirits and all of these magical dimensions to get to interface in a clearer way than our typical embodied consciousness. The medicine is not solely about literal visions. Some people get them, some people don't. This is also a medicine about vision as insight, sort of clear knowing and understanding that it can bring, whether or not you're actually getting visuals. The visions are gifts. They're also very personal, and they should be treated that way. Visions also come after the healers have done some cleaning on you as well. You know, the visionary space is adjacent to the dream space in the sense that sometimes it's literal, but sometimes there's deeper meaning and metaphor there. And so, again, when we're kind of discerning these experiences, that can be helpful to keep in mind. I think about what scientists are now saying about dreams, and that when we first go to sleep, our brains are just clearing out stuff. And so those can be more literal, but then as we get closer to waking up, they can take on a more metaphorical or meaningful vision for us. Similarly, the visionary space can also happen within those poles as well. Tanya does a great deal with dream work. I don't know if you have anything that you'd like to add.
We will be again mentioning that the kind of work we do in this tradition is what we call the shadow work. And it not only means that we are bringing light into many different parts of us who have been in the shadows, but it also refers to all this subconscious material that very often times show up in these states of dreaming. And it will be different for everyone because, of course, we all develop different relationships with our dreams as well. Like in our Western culture, we have forgotten that we spent basically one third of our lives in this realm of dreams, which used to be in many nations cultivated as a space of consciousness as well. So some people spontaneously, naturally have kept this kind of connection with their dreams is not necessarily the case for everyone, but the medicine communicates a lot in its very particular languages in this dreamlike state, and we will be discovering for each one of us what does that mean in the sacred space during the ceremonies and in between the ceremonies as well.
Yeah, dreams are extremely important in this work because there is that relation between the dream world and the visionary space. And I remember on my first diet when I was starving in the woods, they would come by once a day to ask me three questions. Do you have water? Do you have toilet paper? And are you dreaming? And then they would leave. So it's very, very core. It's very, very important. Some of this wisdom can come in visions. Some of them can come as like sort of messages or downloads as well. One thing that we want to be really careful of is the ayahuasca told me. Ayahuasca told me, blah, blah, blah. And to really own it more come to it with a place of responsibility that I was shown. Like, this is what revealed to me. This is how I'm interpreting it. It's me. It's not ayahuasca told me. Sometimes it does feel like a very clear message. It might even come in words. But again, we're working with our egos. And so it does take some time to make discernments between what is being actually received as a message from the medicine and what is our egos being very loud and doing a great imitation of ayahuasca. Another thing, too, is just in terms of being in our private space, in the ceremony space, we won't be talking. We won't be touching other people. We'll just be staying in our own little mat. And the only people coming over to our mats will be facilitators and the healers. But likewise, if you get a message about another person, you get to keep that to yourself. We're just keeping everything in our own sandbox in this process. And we share pretty much solely in the integration space. And so this is where some of the guidance comes in after your ceremonies. When you talk about your experiences, we'll be there to kind of help you to process and work with that to lead you into the next ceremony. There are tools also that will be particularly helpful, that are always helpful all the time. So these are great things to begin practicing now, because again, as much as you can make them habit, they will only serve you when we get to the maloka. But working with the breath, observing the mind and thoughts without identifying with the mind and thoughts, this can be a lot harder on ayahuasca. So the more you can do it in your daily life, the better. Being curious and open to the present moment as it's coming to you, engaging with what is happening. Being aware of your body position and just being aware of your body in general. How's your heart beating? How is your breath? Are you aware of what's happening in the room? Just all the good stuff that comes with checking in. Cultivating compassion for oneself and others is very much going to serve you. Compassion is a big part of the medicine. Practicing patience. Learning to feel more comfortable in the space where you don't know, because everybody likes to know, but just learning to trust and to be okay to sit in the mystery and have gratitude for it. It's going to be very helpful. A lot of what we're going to be doing as well is helping you to remove judgment from your language. We're all going to do it. And I'm sure Tanya and I will slip to you, and you guys will be like, wait a minute, you said something. But to really be able to express ourselves, our pasts, our present, our ceremonies in the most neutral language as possible, in the least emotionally narrative driven way as possible, so that we can begin to reframe our experiences and our work out of that prison of good and bad, and begin to translate the unpleasant and the pleasant as our teacher and our ally, and to see the unpleasant as challenging rather than bad, so that we can remain more open, because I'm pretty resistant to bad stuff, and I think most of us are. But just shifting our language just a touch can really help us to remain open to the process.
Like resistance is one of those important words and patterns to observe. Because very often, one of the words that we are using in these ceremonial spaces is allowing the surrendering. Whenever we observe that there's resistance, just observe that it is there and observe how the body is reacting to that, how the medicine is interacting with the resistance, how we're meeting our resistance. And even if it's just as an experiment, shift towards surrendering and allowing. And in this, of course, like our greatest helpers and allies will be ourselves, basically ourselves grounding always in the heart. If we ever are facing a challenging situation, it's useful to keep in mind that we can pause for a second and just ask our heart, our gut, where's our true north, and keep reminding ourselves to move into that direction. But also, the plants will be our greatest, most significant friends and helpers and allies. And as well, a part of what has been significant in many ceremonies where I have been helping is that there will be a team of people at the service of you in this ceremony. The facilitators at Soltara, who are super experienced, as well as, of course, the maestros and ourselves as well. So at some point, whenever you see that something is getting beyond what you feel you can handle at that time, and the clear connection between you and your heart or you and your body is not as tangible at that moment, ask yourself, how comfortable are you with asking for help? It's sometimes like just opening up to the possibility of saying, I need help in the space, reframes again and rewires how our relationships have been. And we must not forget that this is a relational container. We are entering in a relationship with ourselves, with our wholeness, with the medicine, and also with the people who will be there exactly for giving this support.
Yeah, we'll be getting more into asking for help when we arrive at Soltara. That can be a big sticking point for quite a few people. I wanted to talk about the intentions. Intentions, it comes from the French word purpose and aspiration. From the Latin, it means turn one's intention to stretch out or extend. And in the Proto-German, it is consideration. Intentions, this is not a Shipibo thing. This is part of the synthesis of the West meeting the Shipibo tradition. And we have found that it can be an extremely helpful tool because we in the West do tend to have monkey mind, as the Buddhists say. And so it can be very helpful to have a point of focus and to really learn how to come into the space with intention because we live in a culture that really lacks intention, except for maybe selling you something more. It can also be a useful tool in grounding us during the ceremony. Sometimes holding on to that intention that you went in with is the only thing that feels real in the moment, or if it's really confusing and you can remember, like, oh, right, I asked this. So it can be super useful in many different ways. And it can also be helpful in hindsight, where we're like, what was that ceremony about? And then we remember our intention and it's like, click. It can sometimes be the key that brings everything into alignment. We're going to be working with you in the space to help you set your intentions before each ceremony. But it's also important not to get super attached to our intentions because the medicine's going to do what the medicine's going to do. It's kind of, in a sense, more for us. Not that the medicine doesn't hear it, but it can also be something that we can let go of too, if it doesn't serve us. So we don't want to be, super, super attached, but it's also something that can be really an important part of our process leading up to ceremony and during ceremony and after ceremony. One of your homework assignments is to start thinking about your intention for your first ceremony, keeping in mind that that might change the second before you drink. Or even after you drink, but just to start thinking about it. And then also to begin thinking about your intention for this whole retreat, which again might change in the middle. Often I think of it a bit like I do when I'm traveling out of the country. It's risk management in a sense, where you book your hotels and you do all the responsible things, but then when you get there, you let go. Because maybe the weather's doing something different or the locals know something better. And so you just kind of do the best you can until you get there. But then once you're there, if everything shifts, go with it. Purging is probably one of the most popular aspects of ayahuasca in our culture. Most people think of vomiting, and vomiting certainly is a part of ceremonies. It's not a definite thing. I've met people who've drank many, many times, and that's just not how it works for them. So it's, again, with expectations, it's not a guaranteed thing. But purging, it comes from the French for purify and also the Latin to clear someone of a charge. So it's a legal term. So purging, this purification that ayahuasca offers to us, can come in many different forms. And vomiting is the most popular, if you want to call it that. But there's also any way that your body is releasing energy. So that can be shaking, it can be yawning, it can be emotions arising, it can be mental, you can have tears. And sometimes they're not even crying, just your tear ducts can open and water will stream out of them, even though you're not feeling any sort of charged emotion at the time. So there's many, many different ways that your body will express the energetic purification that's happening for you from the work that the healers are doing. Do you have anything to add to that, Tanya?
The only thing that I always enjoy adding to this is like even the vomiting. Like we have an idea of what vomiting is, but I can't even call my vomit vomit because it really feels like a purge. It's not a digestive vomit. It's something completely different. Like the body registers this as something energetic. It's coming out from the mouth, but it's not your digestion. It's completely different and new.
Yeah, it looks the same from the outside, but the internal experience is quite different. So, not only will we be maintaining a sacred space inside the maloka, we'll also be maintaining it outside of ceremony during the retreat as well. One thing to note just about the sounds during ceremony is that it can get a little rowdy in terms of the sound, like it can get intense. Obviously, people are asked not to make unnecessary noise, but purging happens in an energetic way. And so sometimes people might be upset because perhaps they were asked to be quieter when somebody may have been making a lot of sound and were not asked to be quieter. And it's because the healers and the facilitators are not, again, weighing it by volume or decibels of sound. They're aware of what's happening energetically for that person. And sometimes purifications are louder than other purifications. And so they're looking at a qualitative difference in energy. So that's something to keep in mind. And also, sometimes I've heard more than once that people were very distracted by the sounds going on in the ceremony space, not realizing that that was their ceremony. That the medicine was showing them what takes them out of their own process, what takes them out of them being able to focus on themselves. It's just really interesting how the medicine can work again from night to night. There have been nights when not much was happening, but every little pin drop, I was like, what's that? What's that? And then I've had nights where someone came up to me afterwards and said, man, that person next to you sure had a big night. And I had no idea. I was so deep in my own space. And so, again, when we're projecting out, it's a mirror for what is actually taking place within us. And so, yeah, we really encourage you to take these opportunities. And again, if we're upset about something in the outside that we couldn't control, oh man, it's rich, rich soil. Like we welcome triggers here. One thing I wanted to mention that you might want to bring to ceremony that's not included on the Saltara list is a sacred object. It's not necessary, but it can be nice. If there's a particular crystal that means something to you to bring, it can be grounding, if you're feeling ungrounded during ceremony, just to reach over and be able to hold something that really means a lot to you. That can be really beautiful. And also, if you want to bring some sage or Palo Santo, you're welcome to do that as well. It's not necessary. We ask you not to burn that inside the maloca, but your tools are welcome. But the healers will be doing the work in the space. That was just something we wanted to mention, just to maybe add to your ceremonial mat. Not only are we learning to hold space for ourselves and others, we're also learning how to hold space for our medicine. And we're learning how to hold space for medicine itself. Again, we're learning to ask for help. We're learning to check in and be very conscious with others and ourselves. We're being asked to be aware of when we're triggered so that we're not unconsciously responding to someone else in that trigger, that we're not reacting to other people through our conditioning and muscle memory. I was reminded of the statement that hurt people hurt people. And this is the legacy and inheritance of trauma. What we don't transform, we transmit. And so we're coming into the space to experience transformation. And it's a really incredible opportunity to do that. So remember that the ayahuasca and the healers are working on you, as are Tanya and I, that everything that is happening to you is part of your ceremony. And everything that's happening to you is an opportunity to practice all of the tools that we just mentioned in and off the court. Once we get to Saltara, it may shift. It may become more intense. It may become lighter. But we really just want everyone to just stay aware. Especially as we go to these more sensitive levels that the dieta brings us to. It's humbling to enter into something entirely new. In a way, it's a rebirth. And that is why some people do have that experience of death. It's because something in you is asking to be reborn. And one of the most beautiful teachings that I received from the ayahuasca is when I did my first diet, I was like, why do you work with us? Like, it's so clear all of the things that we get from you, but what do you get out of this? And the message I received was that these plants love working with the human heart. And that's going to be your best medicine throughout this. The more you live in your heart throughout this process, the more it will serve you. Just two final notes. One is I forgot to put something on the dieta restriction list. And so we're going to be asking all of you to give up citrus over the next week before you come, the week out. So enjoy your citrus for the next few days. But the foods with high acid can limit your ability to connect with the medicine. So it's not us being mean. It's us making the ayahuasca the center of this process as opposed to our taste buds. The other note is that you will be meeting after the first ceremony with the healers. You'll be receiving information perhaps about your plant treatments, but it'll be an opportunity because essentially what happens in that first ceremony is it's like I see it like X-ray vision, but it's sort of like they scan you, like they scan your energetic field. And so they see different areas that need to be cleaned and worked on, and it can help to have the human being talk a little bit more about the human context around which that energy might make sense. And it can make their process of healing more efficient. And so, aside from thinking about your intentions, we encourage you to start thinking about your consultations with the healers. I've made a handout that is available to you on the information page for this retreat with all the dates and dieta packet and all of that. So whenever you're able to go there and you'll see it, it's a little button, it says consulta. And so that's something to just start thinking about because there's not a whole lot of time with them. So really want to try to come in with the most focused highlights, the most important stuff that you're working with that can help them help you. Did you have any final remarks, Tanya, before we open it up to the Q&A?
I will open it up for the Q&A. I'm really curious to see if you have any questions that you would like to.
Yeah, just threw a lot of information at you, so.
Leslie, yes.
How important is it for us to bring that red light?
Yeah, thank you, Leslie. You'll be fine. I mean, you have some pretty extenuating circumstances. It's they'll understand if you don't have a red light, so you'll be fine. But the red light is extremely important, again, because of the visionary space. I don't actually know why, but the red lights, I mean, we still use them very conservatively, but the red light, that frequency is less interruptive to the visionary process of the healers. So that's why they're used.
Are you two present during the ceremony?
Yeah, typically facilitators take facilitator doses. They're often, helping out in ceremonies. So they take enough to connect to the plants and connect to the space energetically and just have that increased awareness of what's happening in the space. But they're not taking doses to do their own work. So Tanya and I, because we're not going to be helping you walk to the bathroom and making sure you're safe, the facilitators have that down. I'm not quite sure what dosage I'll be doing just yet, but that's how it's done. Yeah. And again, I talked to a facilitator who said that, she took like a tiny, tiny dose and had like a full-blown ceremony once. And so again, these dosages, for the most part, I would say that they're somewhat predictable, but you never know.
Hi, everybody. Hey, I just wanted to ask, what's the best way to deal with triggers? I feel so open and raw, and triggers are coming at me. And is it just like what I'm trying to do is just go, oh, hello, I see you. I'll work with you in a week. Can you hang on until we get there? Is that the right thing to do? Like, I also have my therapist on call if I have to, but like, any advice you have for managing all this stuff that's coming up because of the dieta.
These triggers are showing up for you because they're there all the time, right? And it's all the non-dieta stuff that makes these things tolerable so that you can, you manage in the conditioned way that you manage things. And so if any triggers feel like they're at the level where you can be present with them, maybe just take one small one, if there is a small one, and just, yeah, let it be a teacher for you. And let it show you how you've managed that trigger and start to get curious and explore other ways and what parts of your shadow it's bringing up and see how to be present with that shadow, part of your shadow, in a more graceful way. Because we're really learning how to be shadow dancers. We're learning how to dance with our shadows instead of pushing them away.
Something I would add is allowing yourself to relate to the triggers rather than just react to them. So with this openness and curiosity, even ask your trigger, like you're saying, okay, I will be looking at you within a week, but ask your trigger. Are you feeling seen? Are you feeling like considered with this question? Is there anything urgent that I should be attending to right now? Can we negotiate? Like, I'm not sure if this dieta or whatever is making me a bit weak and I'm not completely grounded. Is it okay if we wait a little? Like, are you still feeling considered and seen and heard? And I will for sure will be taking care of you later on. But is it okay? And start befriending our triggers and creating a relationship with them as well.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Miek, I think I did ask this question last time, but it still keeps coming up for me. So I probably didn't understand the answer as well as I thought at the time. But I think a lot about how we might get messages or we might not get messages or whatever our experience is. And I always come back to like How do I know that what I have understood is what I'm supposed to understand? So, for example, I get worried about, like, what if there's a confirmation bias that's wired into me?
Can I interrupt you real quick?
Of course, yes.
So one of the things we're going to be removing from our language is the word should.
Ah, okay.
Does
Okay.
that
I do
help?
try to do that. So let me try and rephrase that. How do we know what we ascertain from our ceremony is the message that is meant for us, and we haven't misunderstood the message, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Or we've thought it to be something that just is because of the wiring that we've had since we've been kids or something. Like a confirmation bias is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think there's a few ways to answer this. The probably cleanest and shortest way is that the medicine is offering us love and wisdom. And so if the message coming through isn't that, then that can be a good place to start in terms of discernment. You know, like, is this bringing you deeper into your heart or is it pulling you out of your body?
And
Great.
a lot of what we will be doing with the medicine is also connecting with our intuition. So there's no absolute answer to your question because also for now it's just hypothetical. We'll start landing in the experience and the body. There will be a different kind of clarity coming through it. Most of the answers our body knows already. Our vision in general has been full of obstacles to connect with our essence, but our essence is making room for it to fully express. It will come with this same kind of clarity and non-doubt.
Yeah, so much about this work is about experience. So much of our experience has been invalidated or eclipsed or denied. And so we are giving us the gift of valuing our authentic experience. And when we receive these gifts from another place with the medicine, we have the opportunity to move those teachings into our experience and play with it to see what is true for us.
How long are the fasts? I hadn't heard about that. If you decided to fast, does that mean during the ceremony?
Some people choose to fast, like they won't eat breakfast, they won't eat the whole day before ceremonies. Some really, really experienced people, I mean, even the first time I did a diet, I did a 5-day fast, but it just depends on how you feel the medicine is guiding you, along with the support and feedback from the facilitators who are really experienced and know how to keep you safe. But yeah, I mean, if you want to do a fast when you get there, I would speak with one of the facilitators to come up with some sort of game plan. Most of us, our first love came from food. Our first source of love was food from our mothers, or wasn't received from our mothers. So fasting can be a really powerful medicine for us to connect to that break from a love for ourselves. Any other questions? Any comments?
I'm just so grateful that you provided this space so we can connect before we go. And I can't wait to see you all. And I'm just very excited and a little scared, but mostly excited. I just appreciate you all. Thank you.
We are very excited too.
Yeah, so glad you're joining us.
I would like to say too that I'm really looking forward to it. Like, we are in a group chat now with a few, and somebody asked, how are you all doing? And I was like, I actually feel like I'm subconsciously preparing for this, like maybe already 2 years without knowing about the plant medicine. So I really feel like counting down the days until we can come to Costa Rica and do this beautiful journey and to meet you all.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're all sort of bridges to the light. We all have a place, we all have a path and a lane in this world, in the way that we serve others, sometimes just by the way we are in the world. Like, there are just some people I'm around that I'm just so happy when I'm around them, just because of who they are. And they don't even have to be doing anything. And so, you know, the plants are the closest to the light. They have the highest technology, highest conversion of light. into material energy. If we could harness that kind of energy, we'd be in a much better place as a species right now. But that's just how intelligent plants are. And then the healers are the bridge from the plants to people like us who don't hear plants talk to us quite, at least in the same way. And then there's the bridge of the facilitators who help hold that space in between the active plant medicine space and people who are doing deep work. And you all will be bridges of people who have experienced this medicine and embody these teachings and are endeavoring to heal in the ancient way of wisdom traditions. And it will be a bridge back into the worlds that you inhabit. It's very beautiful. We're really honored to have you.
I just have a quick question, like to clarify. So when we are doing our ceremonies, the maestros and the facilitators, and both you and Tanya also will be drinking ayahuasca, but like different amounts.
Yeah, we'll be drinking different amounts.
We'll be drinking different amounts, and what Mia was saying just before, it's also with a different intention. We are drinking with the intention of helping. So medicine understands. This is part of, like, even if it's a small dosage, and you know that when you are on your own work, a small dosage may guide you a long way. When the medicine understands that we are doing it in the purpose and with the intention of helping, it also interacts differently in our system. And some people, some facilitators or some helpers decide not to drink for any whatever reason, either because they can easily connect also with the world of visions without the help of the medicine, but in general, most of us do. But it's basically just to be in this different kind of consciousness, this state of higher consciousness connected with the plants, but knowing how to better support and hold the container for you guys who will be just going deep into your own experience.
Yeah, thank you so much. And any future questions, when we get to Soltara, we'll be able to answer more questions that come up for you as you ponder this talk when we're all together. And then things will be more real because you'll be looking at your mapacho, you'll be seeing the banyos off at the side of the Moloka. But anything that comes up about the diet or anything that really pertains between here and your process before going to Soltara, feel free to reach out and shoot me a short email. Anything regarding the logistics of Soltara, like airplane stuff, transportation stuff, passport stuff, direct to Soltara, and they will be able to help you with all that kind of stuff. We are here for your spirits. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you
Bye.
all. Bye.